Today's episode of Recess Duty is brought to you by Flat. Flat is a collaborative music notation platform for all levels of students, from beginners to professional composers. With the ability to work offline when the idea strikes, or even collaborate in real time, such as a classroom, I have used it for years within my own classroom to let students share and explore composition in their own way. If you're looking to get students composing and collaborating together, or maybe even exploring the musical scores of a 5 million member community, check out Flout below and be sure to use the promo code RecessDuty to get 3-month premier access for free, an additional 3-month access when you email edu@flout.io. If your students are anything like mine, they will thank you. Don't wait. The code expires 1 month after this episode premieres.
Welcome to Recess Duty, a podcast for educators to come together to share struggles, but also celebrate successes by sharing stories and ideas in a safe and supportive environment to collaborate with one another. Here's your host, Levi Allison.
Hey everyone, this is Recess Duty with your host, Levi Allison. And today we're talking with author, inquiry obsessed, Kimberly Mitchell. Thank you so much for joining us, Kimberly. How are you doing?
Thank you, Levi. I'm doing great. I'm in Nairobi, Kenya, and where it's perpetually about 75 degrees. And so I can't complain. I'm really, really happy to be with you today.
Thank you so much. You know, we've been in like similar social circles. Like I've attended so many of your little inquiry fireside chats, which I absolutely love. You know, big fan. I've been on your spotlight. That was also a big honor. And we've been in different Twitter groups. It's just so good to finally meet you. So thank you so much for joining us. So Kimberly, tell us a little bit about yourself to our listeners who may not be familiar with your work.
Great. Well, I started teaching way back in the early 90s. I am I'm a Teach for America Corps member. If you've heard of that program, I was the second year of the program, and I was placed in Compton, California as a fifth grade teacher. And I met some folks who were buzzing about something called international schools. So after a few years of teaching in Los Angeles, I headed down to Quito, Ecuador, and was introduced to international schools and specifically the International Baccalaureate program. And I remember taking part in a professional development session where we acted as the students and the teacher modeled an inquiry-based physics lesson. And Levi, it blew my mind. I mean, it was the first time where I had an experience where I really sat there in that student mode and had to really think and was given the time to think.
Yeah.
And was able to articulate wrong answers without feeling completely embarrassed.
Yeah.
It was just such a radical departure from how I grew up.
Same.
And that was it. It clicked, right? I thought, this is amazing. If I am feeling like this as a quote unquote student, you know, how can we revolutionize, you know, teaching and learning? And then of course I learned about Dewey and all the progressive education that has happened and how, you know, this is not necessarily new.
Yeah.
So this is, it's not new, but it's still not embedded in the culture of teaching around the world.
Agreed.
So I got hooked. I later became an IB principal and helped start the primary years program in the late 90s in Athens, Greece, and then joined IB as a regional board member. And I guess, you know, the question, my own professional inquiry that I was pursuing at that time was, how do we help teachers implement inquiry and how do we make it less esoteric? It's so, you know, we theorize and philosophize and we act like we know what it is, but you know, damn it, show me what it looks like. I'm a math teacher. I'm a social studies teacher. I'm a chemistry teacher. I'm a kindergarten teacher. Show me what it looks like. And so I took up this challenge and I started modeling what I thought inquiry was, probably not perfectly, inside classrooms, and someone filmed them. And that's how it started. That's my genesis story.
How fascinating. Cause I think we all of us who grew up in a very standardized based classroom way have a very similar story. You know, when I started in Kuwait, I had no idea what inquiry was. When I asked for my curriculum and they handed me questions, I was like, no, where's the standards? Where's the benchmarks? I was like, I don't, what are these questions? I don't understand this. And I was like, wait, this is what I'm teaching? Okay, I'm going to need some help. And so I get right. it. I get it. But through that came a lot of learning and reflection of, wow, we're still doing standards, but kids are so much more engaged and they love it so much more. I always say, I don't care how we're learning. As long as we're having fun, then it's good enough for me.
And from what I see on Twitter, my friends, it's happening.
Thank you.
And it's just like, I love hearing people's stories, like, you know, your Kuwait story, like, when did it change for you? Hopefully the next generation of teachers, they'll say, well, that's just how I went. That's how, what I experienced myself in right. school.
And you're helping do that with, you know, being in university and helping future teachers learn how to teach through an inquiry way. As much as I love how I was taught in university, and I really do thank them, and it was an amazing experience, I really didn't have a clue what inquiry was. I really didn't have a clue. And it's been a long journey, and it's been a lot of fun, but a lot of pit stops along the way.
Right. Yeah. That's the challenge. Like, how do we, that, okay, let's say we have a lot of people growing up in very traditional systems. They get to the teacher training program mm-hmm. part. How do we at least open up that space for inquiry? And that, yes, that is my latest challenge and opportunity. And I have to say, I'm really enjoying it. My challenge as a university instructor is the large class sizes, the fixed chairs. But let me tell you about what I do have, what the advantages are. I have planning time. I have grading support. And I have students who have what they need to learn.
Yeah.
So I'm able to do a lot of experimentation with inquiry, and hopefully in modeling inquiry, it's giving them a leg up for when they do enter their own classrooms.
Wow. Bravo. That is just really great. I hopefully teachers around the world will be able to see like what this is happening. And when they do go, because we all know a lot of teachers go into higher ed at the end of their career because of whatever reasons, like, well, hopefully these traditions and stuff will go along with them. So Kimberly, tell us, what are you excited about at the moment? I would say I know, but what are you excited about?
Oh, well, so many things. Okay. Let's start with inquiry. So I have, you know how I said, like, okay, how do we explain this for teachers that makes sense? So I landed on these things, 5 inquiry strategies. Mm-hmm. So really quickly, get personal, stay curious, ask more, talk less, encourage evidence, and extend thinking time. And I could spend several recess duties with you talking about each of those, but I wrote a whole book about them. So I'm still like loving. Like,
absolutely.
I meet people all the time who are creating, like, there are these guys in Chicago who are like doing this great work that extends and does something very different with Socratic seminars that includes social emotional learning. So like, I just keep learning from a lot of people like you who are in the field. Speaking of social emotional learning, I'm really excited about that. Mm-hmm. And I just finished a workshop with teachers because I think, you know, we're asking teachers to teach social emotional learning in classrooms, which is all very good and important. But absolutely. Who's teaching the teachers? Who's taking care of their social and emotional well-being? And that's what I really worry about. I worry about the sustainability of this profession. And so I just finished a 4-week course where we learn strategies as adults to take mm-hmm. care of our own mental health. I feel like I should have one more thing I'm really excited about. I'm really excited. I'm a very excited person about a lot of things, I guess.
Hey, I connect with that.
I mean, I could just keep going. Let's see. I'm also excited about being on a sabbatical right now. You know, I'm married to a elementary school PE teacher, and he and I, our kids were there in college, and one was an exchange student. So we looked at each other one day and said, "Why don't we just leave for a year?" And so we pressed pause, and we're here in Kenya, and it's great. I'm already feeling, just after 2 months, I'm feeling refreshed and really eager to get back to the classroom. I'm not sure if he's there yet, but it's been great. I highly recommend it to folks to take a leap and take a break when it's needed.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back a little bit, you said you took a 4-week course and you learned a lot of different strategies. What was your favorite one?
Oh gosh, I have several. Here's one And this is works really great in like a staff meeting. A lot of these are really good for staff meetings. And okay. I'm a big proponent of revolutionizing and transforming the traditional teacher staff meeting.
Love it.
And turning it into an opportunity to reflect and grow and recharge. So this is called back-to-back listening. And basically you just stand back-to-back with another human being. So you touch each other.
Okay.
And you close your eyes and you listen to a piece of music. I like short pieces like Amelie, the Valise Amelie, beautiful piece. And each person listens, then they turn around and they have a 5-minute discussion where they share all the feelings and emotions and images and any thoughts that came up as they listened to that piece of music.
I'm so stealing this.
Oh, yeah, Levi, this is right up your alley.
So, I was like, we're doing this tomorrow.
And you have to listen to the other person. You know why? Because you have to turn back around with that same person and listen to the same piece of music one more time from their perspective.
That's amazing. I love that.
So it teaches close listening, right? And here's what happens. Like, you'll have someone say, I've never listened to a piece of music with just the timing, the beats. And like, this person listened to it in terms of math. And this person listened to it in terms of a story. And you have to put yourself in the other person's shoes and listen from the other perspective. Very simple, very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. That takes think, pair, share to a whole new meaning.
Yeah, like that's what I mean. Like all these like little, you know, visible thinking routines or, you know, my latest obsession is liberating structures or just any of these routines that we learn about from these fabulous people. I love it when people riff off it. Yeah. You know, it's like jazz. Like, you know that. It's like, okay, let's get really good at this thing called pedagogy and instruction, or let's get really good at the question formulation technique, which is awesome. And then grow it, turn it into something that's yours.
Yeah.
That's what's exciting to me.
Yeah. Do you have an example off the top of your head? I know I'm putting you on a spot of like somebody doing that with your work, because your work has been everywhere. I read your book. I loved your book. I read other books before. So how has somebody riffed off your stuff?
Yeah. I heard about someone doing the QFT and then using the key questions from IB to think about the QFT, that the questions in a different frame. And I've actually then riffed off their work. So now I do that with my graduate students and I have them generate questions and then put it into each of the, are there 8 key questions? I can't remember, but put it under, like categorize them and then look for where they don't have a lot of questions. So maybe they don't have a lot of reflection questions. Maybe it's all form and function. What does that mean? How do you get new perspective questions in? I think, I mean, there's just probably so, you know what the one exercise that I think is, I call it the Trojan horse because it's it just delivers so many surprises, is the one where you think about all the teachers from your life and you try to name them. And then you try to think about their influences on your life and just going through that exercise and then having the opportunity to talk with colleagues about these people is, it brings up all sorts of wonderful issues and all sorts of directions you can go as a staff.
Yeah. Wow. Now, when you were just saying that, I was just going back through all the really important teachers I've had in my life. And I'm like, whoa, that's really powerful.
And how you default to some of their practices for better or for worse, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We teach how we were taught, you know, and for better, for worse. And there are definitely some betters and definitely for some worse, but that's why we're all lifelong learners and we try to grow and get better.
So that brings up another issue. Like, okay, so there are my K-12 teachers, but then I think, who are my teachers today? And do I avoid certain situations where I'm out of my comfort zone? I avoid being a student? Because you ask this of teachers, who are your teachers today? And teachers will often say, well, it's my students or my kids or my spouse. And that's all great. But unless we keep putting ourselves into a more formal education experience, we lose that empathy with our own students of what it feels like to be a student. Right? So like, I don't know if you heard my conversation with Kath Murdoch and Trevor McKenzie recently. I talked about how I like to keep one class. I keep a class where I'm learning something new. I'm a beginner so that I can really empathize with my students. And lately it's been tap dancing.
Yeah.
And I'm lousy at it. you know, but that's good. Like, what helps me? Practice, how I hate practicing, how hard it is, you know, homework, that kind of thing.
No, absolutely. You know, going through formal schooling and stuff, and after getting the first degree, I realized, goodness, there are so many assessments and summatives due at the same time. I was like, does everybody just get together and decide, you know what, we're going to make all of them due on this date? And it reminded me of a strategy or a practice that Trevor McKenzie does, where he puts up this giant calendar and says, mark all your summatives, mark all your assessments. What week do you want yours done? And even in that week, you have a whole week to turn it in. So, you know, giving agency back to his kids and such. And I was like, wow. It's like, how can we do that with all the grade levels? Because I think some of the times that we have so many assessments given to these kids roughly at the same time that, you know, if we're struggling as adults, this, what is our little young learners handling this?
So, oh, that's a really good point. And it just, it makes me think about what potentially could be done school-wide, how that could be transparent, how teachers can come together and put post-its of like what big assignments are due, which months or which weeks of the year to get it all out there. Because that's not a good feeling to be crushed by assignments.
Oh, no, it isn't. You know, with all of this learning and all of this excitement that you and I have for, you know, just inquiry and student agency and all that stuff, what do you wish I know what I would have wished I known when I first started. What do you wish? And I'll share mine afterwards. What do you wish you would have known when you first started?
That I don't need to be an entertainer and I don't need to have all the answers.
Really, I was going to say I didn't have to have all the answers.
Did I take your answer? Yeah. This is why I love you already, Levi. Yes.
You did. I was going to be nice and let you go first. And now I'm regretting it because I really did say I don't have to be the expert. I don't have to know everything. Because I really did think I had to be I had to know everything.
Right. Okay. Let's share with each other how we came to that. Because I don't feel like I came to that right away. I went in thinking I needed to be like a showboat. Mm-hmm. I had to keep them entertained, and then I had to have all the answers. So the entertainment thing changed for me when I actually got the opportunity to watch another teacher who's really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had heard about this teacher from students and parents, and I went to observe her teach, which I think is the best PD ever, is to watch your colleagues teach. And she was just chill, you know? She listened carefully. She let them lead. She didn't have to yell over them. And that was another switch that flipped for me. And then as far as like not having all the answers, I'm still struggling with that one sometimes. Because it's so ingrained in us, right? Like we should know. Have you ever heard of Dan Finkel? He's this math teacher and he has this great TED talk. Mm-hmm. And he talks about teaching math. And one of his points is you are not the answer key. Like it's okay to say yes to students' answers and have them figure it out. And it's just another one of those default pedagogical decisions that we don't make all the time. Sometimes we give the answer.
So no, absolutely.
When did you change? Like, how was your evolution with that?
Oh, well, being a music teacher, you know, being the music person in the whole school, you were defaulted as, oh, this is music he has to know or she has to know. And I was like, whoa, I don't know how to run a mix board. That's not my thing. I don't know how to compose on Finale, these brilliant minds. Like, that is not my area of expertise. You know, I belong to a lot of music groups on Facebook, and I see constantly how music teachers are required to be the composer, the producer, the editor, all of these things for one musical. And I'm like, that's like 5 or 6 different jobs that are different schooling. And I'm like, I just can't do it. And so when it really hit me was when I had this wonderful young lady come to me and say, I'm having this trouble on violin. And I don't know if you know violin very well, but it is a very technical instrument, exceptionally technical. And I said, oh, sweetie, I don't have a clue. And she said, but you're the music teacher. And I said, yeah, and I don't have a clue. I was like, so what are we going to do? And thank the Lord for YouTube, because we looked on YouTube for vibrato and I was like, go learn from Joshua Bell because obviously he's going to know.
Oh my gosh. You're right. You are the end all be all for all things music? Like, do people expect you to be able to play every single instrument?
People don't expect it, but it is very interesting when someone says, how many instruments do you play? And I was like, well, I only play really two, but I'm kind of like, we had to learn most of them, most of the wind instruments. But like, I wouldn't say I can play clarinet very well. I can make a sound, but that doesn't mean it's good. So it's very interesting. And I'm lucky enough to have an entire department here at Chadwick International. There's Demi, who is our early years practitioner. And then there's Paul, who is our grade 4 and 5 music teacher. So we're always throwing ideas out. I know Paul is my string guy. I know Demi is my drama arts person. I'm the tech person. Anytime anybody needs to do something with tech, they come to me, but it's a lot of fun. But it was really tough that first few years being, oh, well, you're the music guy. I'm like,
oh. Right. I'm sure there are some IT people listening in right now who are thinking, oh, yeah, everyone expects me to know all the platforms, how to code, everything.
Right. Yeah. That'll be hilarious. So what are some really amazing resources, you know, not knowing everything? We have to have resources. We have to be able to go out and search for and find things, you know. Because of distance learning and COVID, I have become a lover of using YouTube as ways of quick review, as quick rhythm play alongs. You know, I feel like everybody became a YouTube celebrity overnight because of COVID. And I have, you know, some of my colleagues have made some amazing, amazing little tutorials, little how-to videos about solving how to split screen on an iPad, how to screen record on an iPad, and all these little different things that made teaching really well online. What are some resources you go to for continue learning?
Lately, it's been podcasts. I get a lot of inspiration and ideas from a podcast called This American Life, which, you know, profiles things in the United States, but certainly it's definitely leans more global thinking. And it's, you know, it's thematic. There are usually three parts to the story. I think I mentioned this earlier, there is a group of folks around the world who utilize these 33 structures called liberating structures. And they're just protocols for unleashing people's imagination and expanding people's understanding. And so I'm really excited about those kinds of things. And I guess I would say, you know, maybe in my reflective state on sabbatical, I would say, just silent walks in nature and watching that idea of biomimicry, getting off our screens and observing what nature has to teach us.
Oh, yeah.
Because I get distracted, but.
Exactly. And, you know, I just had Kevin O'Shea on earlier episode, and he talks about how he was at recess one time and he was just looking at a tree, nothing else, just looking at a tree. And all the kids came rushing. What are you looking at, Mr. O'Shea? What are you looking at, Mr. O'Shea? I'm just looking at the tree. What are you looking for? I don't know. Just looking. And then they were looking at the bark. Then they were looking at little ants and little bugs. And then it spurred all these ideas. And I'm like, how wonderful is it just to be able to go outside and spark all these curiosities? And so, yeah. Big shout out to Kevin O'Shea. Love that educator. He's amazing.
Kevin's idea reminds me of another teacher I know who every couple of weeks would bring their students outside and the students would find their own tree. Of course, this means you need some trees or you need any kind of plants or any, maybe even a rock. They go back to that same sitting spot and they'd sketch or observe or write questions and they'd have 20 minutes just to observe and they'd go back. You know, what they'd see are changes over time. Sometimes simple, sometimes less is more.
100%. And I love one of your 5 inquiry or power of 5 of like talk less, listen more. I think that goes along with the same lines of, you know, we try, you know, when I first started out, maybe I should try to change what I would know, less scripting and more leave blanks. Because, you know, when we first started, you wanted line by line script, 5 minutes here, 2 minutes here, 3 minutes here. And I'm like, oh, boy, I'm lucky if a lesson plan's on a post-it note anymore.
You know, the other thing I'm trying to do is pause after listening to someone and responding. And again, this is probably a cultural thing, feeling like I need to fill space or I need to react quickly. But, you know, in many cultures, a sign of respect is waiting a few seconds after someone has said something before responding. So it really, you really absorb it. Something I'm still working on.
I was just thinking, I was like, how many times have I interrupted her today?
but is the banter. Like, you and I are going back. There's a beauty in that too. It's
no,
just,
you're right.
Yeah. But we're both probably very gregarious people, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, well, yeah.
We just have to make space for other people.
I was just thinking, actually, I think adaptive schools, one of the norms of collaboration is actually pausing. Actually, I think that is it. And maybe, I'll put that on my developing checklist of working on. Thank you. Thank you so much, Kimberly. Where can people find you if they want to connect with you?
Inquirypartners.com. Mm-hmm. And on Twitter, my handle's at inquiry5, the word 5. And I'd be glad to connect with anyone.
That's awesome. And all of those links, listeners, will be in the show notes below. So Kimberly, we ask all guests here at Recess Duty, what do you remember from recess growing up?
The monkey bars. I was really into Nadia Comaneci back in the day, the gymnast. And so I would try and be her on the monkey bars, and I would just twirl around and around and around. And I would sometimes, if I was feeling extra naughty, I'd try and stand on top of the monkey bars and pretend it was a balance beam. Not the safest thing. I had lots of calluses. I hated that.
I was going to say, I bet your teachers on recess duty was just like, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
Right. Just turn around. Don't look. There's Kim on the bars again. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Thank you, Kimberly, for coming to this week's episode of Recess Duty. Be sure to follow us in your favorite podcast app so you don't miss our next episode. I'm Levi Allison, and have a great day of learning, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Recess Duty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, please share this podcast with other educators so they can join the fun. And that is the end of our Recess Duty.